Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Podcast After Dark. My name is Craig Cairns and joining me for Monday's look back on the weekend's action is Tom Watt. How are you doing, Tom?
Very good, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, pretty good, mate. Pretty good. Still getting over this cold. Almost there. But you're going to have to put up with my nasally or lack of nasally voice. I don't know, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Let's just move on. We are going to go over the games from the weekend. There were, of course, the Premier Sports Cup semi-finals, which we'll look at first before turning our attention to the league games. Let's start, Tom, with an astonishing match at Hampden on Sunday, where Hibs ran out 3-1 winners against Rangers, a Martin Boyle first half hat-trick. Scott Arfield got a consolation. And I know that there's much has been made about the Rangers being between two managers, but we'll get to them later. It was Hibs' day. It was a brave setup from Jack Ross. He went with Josh Campbell. He went attacking. He took the game to Rangers. He got his rewards. He just got it spot on the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly felt like some of the frustrations of the last few weeks and some of the criticisms that they've had and you know, not being able to play for the last couple of weeks were taken out on Rangers and they were let off the leash because they went at Rangers from the first minute and within the first 3 minutes there was two bookings and you thought this is gonna be tasty, this is gonna be one of those games. You know, when we're 8-10 or something like that at the end of it, but Hibs were aggressive in a good way. They pegged Rangers back. They were, like you say, they were adventurous with their setup. Nisbet and Boyle were like right on, pretty much playing right on the Rangers centre back pairing, and it just didn't let up for that first half. I mean, it was 3-1 and it was a slight bit of defence from Ryan Portis to let Rangers leave the door slightly ajar at half time, but it could have easily been 4. It was clinical, it was aggressive. The pace at which they were playing was the kind of pace that we saw Rangers really doing last season. And they made them look... Hibs made Rangers look very, very ordinary. Joe Newell had a very, very good game. Jake Dawhays had a very, very good game. Chris Cadden had a very, very good game. A few players that I think probably were due one after the the kind of downturn in form before they had their kind of enforced absence. But no, incredibly impressed with Hibs. I did not see this coming. I thought that there'd be a bit of ring rustiness, but there wasn't at all. They went for the throat.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, although we should know better, because as you've mentioned before, the Rangers have a history of this now, a history of losing, bottling cups. But one of the players that we have to single out is clearly Martin Boyle. And I think on Sunday we saw every aspect of Martin Boyle's game. How good he is in the build-up for Hibs, how great he is as an option, offering himself for the midfielders, for through balls, things like that, winning a penalty. How many times does he do that, scoring the penalty? It was just a quintessential Martin Boyle performance.
Yeah, there is now so much to his game, and there's new things that he just seems to be, just like tiny little tweaks that he seems to be making every season. Like he is the best attacking player outside of the Old Firm in the league by a fair stretch, but like he's dangerous from distance. He gets in behind, he can turn his man, like he's got electric pace. His delivery is better than it, I think, a couple of seasons ago when it was maybe a little hit or miss. Yeah, he draws fouls, he plays off the shoulder, and he did all of that. Like, he absolutely tortured the Rangers backline, and they didn't know what to, they didn't really know what to do with him. And when he's playing like that, it is a challenge. You know, do you push up close to him, in which case you give away a lot of fouls, and the minute he turns you, then he's away and he's in behind. Or if they try and sit off him, he was like floating into channels and drawing players out of position. Yeah, an all-round, pretty much perfect game from him. And when he plays like that, there's not an awful lot that he can do. For considering where he was last season, and yes, the Hibs have fallen off a little bit in the last few weeks, considering how good he was last season, there's almost been the same amount of, for me, there's almost been the same amount of improvement in him individually, not in the rest of his teammates necessarily, between, you know, the end of 1920 to 2021, as there has been in the same period again. And you know, Tony Anderson of this Parrish said in the chat he cannot believe no one spent 500 grand on him 6 months ago, because what an absolute steal that would have been. I mean, he's still only 28, and for a player of that ability who causes that many problems and still has an awful lot of football in him, for him to be available for a club, you know, down south or elsewhere for a snip when he's, you know, there's players that are going for 10 times that are not nowhere near as good as he is. Yeah, just a sort of proper superstar performance from
Ryan Porteous, though. We have to give him a mention. You mentioned his mistake, but that aside, he was absolutely fantastic. And not only on the pitch was he brilliant, he got that dig in at Gerrard at the end, which is fantastic.
Yeah, services to Patter at the end. That just... like, and he loves these games. Like, he's had to put up with a lot of stick. He's had to, you know, been sent off. He's had to put up with an awful lot of scrutiny around his performances in that. And the only real mistake, there was one late on in the game, and Conor Goldson should have scored for Rangers. But like that, we all know that he has these mistakes in him, and occasionally he's prone to them. Still very young. Remains to be seen whether he'll iron that out of his game, but that mistake aside, and from that point, didn't put a foot wrong. And everything that was good about his game, you know, like stepping out, breaking into the midfield, having a surprising range of passing, all of that was on show. Didn't break lines, wasn't suckered into anything, didn't get involved. So yeah, and you can see that he clearly relishes these games with a bit of edge to them, and to to know what's coming when you do an interview, a post-match interview like that, and to still fancy doing it. Yeah, it was subtle, and it could easily have been like eye roll, but it was funny.
I guess she didn't pick up on it at first as well. That was why she tweeted about it later, but at first she didn't pick up on it, and she was like, yeah, it's a fairly reasonable question or something like that. But yeah, they couldn't even hear her because the Hibs fans were going that nuts. It looked, the celebrations at the end were brilliant. We should, however, talk about Rangers. It was just one of the most lackluster performances I've seen from Rangers in a long time. And not only that, I felt, don't want to be too harsh on David McCallum. He's been given a thankless task there. I mean, he's, not only does he not have the credentials, he's been thrown in a difficult situation. I mean, even Murty strange, coincidentally contracted COVID and then left the club in the week that I think it was, like, well, before and after the game. I mean, I'm sure that actually all happened. I'm just joking there. But yeah, this guy has been thrown into thrown at the deep end, couldn't get a much bigger game to just have as a one-off. So you don't want to be too critical of him, but I felt that Rangers' lineup was very, he went with the stalwarts. He went with the experience, I think, rather than the best team or the team to win the game.
You would be hard pushed to pick a Rangers team that's kind of stodgy. There's so much creativity in that team. There's so much creativity, especially in the midfield. There's so much energy in the midfield to find to set up the team that manages to blunt that is kind of good going. I mean, and I don't think it was just that. I think there were an awful lot of performers that, like Conor Goldson and Liam Balogun, who have both been excellent this season, the last couple of seasons, had really, really poor games. Stephen Davis had a really poor game. Ryan Kent had a really poor game. There were too many performers there that just didn't turn up. But the midfield, especially with Kamara, Arfield, and Davis, just didn't seem balanced. Didn't seem to get a grip. Especially the pace that Hibs were playing at, never really seemed to be in any kind of control over it. And even in the games when, I mean, it's fair to say that this season Rangers haven't hit the heights. They've conceded first, or they've had their scares. You know, still top of the league, still at current time of recording, the best team in the country. But even in those games, you felt that they've had enough control over the centre of the park, especially, that it will only be a matter of time before something drops for them. And you never got that impression here. You never got the impression that they were going to impose their will on anything that was going on. The starting 11 was stodgy. The substitutions were far too late. I mean, fair enough, 3-1 down, you could argue that it was far too late to do anything anyway, but it didn't change the shape. It didn't, like, at one point, I think having certainly four, maybe even five recognised central midfield players on the
sitting
on the
midfield
park,
players, yeah.
Yeah, at once, at a point when, yes, you're 3-1 down, but you're Rangers. You make it 3-2 and you make it nervous against that. You know, Hibs have also got previous for not necessarily dealing with lots of pressure late on.
When Arfield puts that goal in right after they've gone 3-0 up, that's when you start to think, well, if anybody's going to fuck this up, it's going to be Hibs. Hibs, like you say, I mean, I know there's plenty of other teams that would as well, but like, Hibs do have previous of doing this kind of thing as well. So yeah, it wouldn't have been a stretch for a Rangers team to play poorly for 84 minutes, score their second one then, and then put pressure on for the rest of the game. And then there was 5 minutes at the injury time as well.
And that's largely what Rangers have done this season, is for in almost every game that I've seen them, they've been mediocre for the equivalent of a half, for 45 minutes. Not always continuously, but there's been games they've been absolutely battered for 20 minutes, and maybe they're only a goal behind, but they've got quality in the team. They've got a number of creative players. They've got a lot of goal threats. They've got a huge strength and depth on the bench. And at some point, you always get the feeling that, you know, the momentum will shift, and it doesn't need a huge shift in momentum for the opposing team to kind of think, right, what do we do now? And I think that was one of the more surprising elements of it, is Rangers had no right to have a way back into that game after the first half that they'd had. They had no right to only be two goals behind. They'd been comprehensively battered and outplayed. But to get to halftime and think, well, you know, we will get a chance, and to not go on the front foot in the second half, not to make changes, not to be a little bit more aggressive with forcing a game plan on Hibs, was very uncharacteristic of the way that they've been so far, well, in the last sort of 2 years, really. And I think that will be that'll be a big worry. I think the bigger worry, as a new manager comes in, were the like post-match interviews and the feeling that, and this is not to say it will be, but the feeling that there is a that Van Bronckhorst has got a huge job on his hands to fill a big personality-shaped hole. The players obviously got behind Gerrard. The players obviously bought into him. There were an awful lot of players there that were only there because of who Steven Gerrard was. And the interviews afterwards, where it just felt defeatist. It felt, the Goldson's comments, I think it was Goldson's comments, just about never really feeling like we're, it was words to the effect of, you know, we never really felt like we were going to get back into this, which just seems so unlike the Rangers team of the last 2 years. And I get the impression, and again, not privy to any special information of this, but maybe Gerrard's move was on the cards for a little bit. Maybe that was one of the reasons things have been a little flat for a wee while. But the manner of that departure, and the fact there has been a great big gaping hole in their preparation and in the personality in the dressing room, that's something that's going to need to be addressed quite quickly. I think that's the bigger problem for this season, because Rangers have been beaten. They've been beaten. They've been outplayed at different points of the season. They've been outthought at different points of the season. But they've never downed tools. And I think, not to take anything away from Hibs, who just put them under the cosh and they had no response to it, but on Saturday, Rangers downed tools.
Yeah, and as Richard Gough said on the radio, Rangers are a club founded on no surrender, so it's strange to see them capitulate like that. Let's move to the second, or the first actually, semi-final, but the second one that we're going to cover, and that was Celtic 1, St Johnstone 0. James Forrest goal after coming on as substitute. Not quite as much incident to speak of in this match, Tom, but it looked like Jota, who ended up getting man of the match, it looked like he was going to have the game wrapped up in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, he just kept doing... He kept beating people and then beating them again. And then it was like playing a 14-year-old at FIFA or something like that. Just fuck off and stop. Stop doing tricks. Just score and get over with. Stop. I don't need the piss ripped out of me. He was brilliant. Just was getting on the end of things, was kind of playing between the lines, was stretching things. Yeah, he's really growing in stature, though. I think every time I've seen him in the last sort of 6 weeks, he's been slightly better than he was before. And seems to be really finding his feet. It was a weird game in the sense that when we did the preview of this, that was when I did the preview of this game with Tony last week, and thought it would be quite a stodgy game. St Johnstone would make life difficult. I thought Celtic would win. I thought they would win by a goal. And I'm not just trying to pile massive amounts of praise on myself, but we kind of called it. The only difference being that I think when the St. Johnstone side, like either a full complement of St. Johnstone players or the St. Johnstone side of last season would maybe have taken one of the chances that they had. Celtic going forward are a force at the moment. They're pretty terrifying. And Jota and Forrest, if he's getting back to full fitness, and Furuhashi and Turnbull, they're incredibly good footballers. So you get them in full flow, they're going to cause all sorts of problems. The insistence on playing out from the back, the slight hesitancy in closing things down around, you know, 20 yards out, and still being susceptible to at set pieces, was kind of what we identified that St. Johnstone might get some joy. I think they did get a little joy. They just didn't really have the confidence, maybe, or a couple of players being injured to be able to really inflict any like really properly worry Celtic, with the exception of Joe Hart taking about 20 minutes to clear a ball rolled across his own goal mouth. I think that was probably the most dangerous point. So yeah, I mean, I think Celtic thoroughly deserved it. They played some exhilarating football in parts. I still think their biggest worry is, at the moment, they seem like when you were 14 years old and the best player on your team injured his ankle and decided he's going to go in goals just to play. So he's all right. He's just not really a goalie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But no, Celtic thoroughly deserved it. St. Johnstone that's the first time they've lost a cup competition since March 2020.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty incredible. I just feel that, to go back to something you were saying there about them, finishing's just been their issue all season, hasn't it? No matter who's fit, really. And you can see the few opportunities that they do get, they make the wrong decision or they don't execute it well enough. The Virtanen one, when he comes on towards the end, he just doesn't play the right ball in that he should. And yeah, that's just kind of been their issue. They're a solid enough side. Other than that, they don't concede a lot of goals. They are close in many matches, and it's, I don't know, in many ways it's the same old story for St. Johnstone, because they start season poorly almost every year, and then get it together. This one feels like it's going on a little bit longer. And I know, while there's no shame in being double cup holders and going out at the semi-final the next season, it still is a longer trend of them failing to find the net. It is becoming a real issue for them. But to go back to Celtic, mentioned at the start of this discussion, James Forrest got the winner. It's great to see him scoring, making his way back into the team. It's been a long time. It's been a long battle back from injury for him.
It has. I mean, and not just for Celtic, obviously for Scotland as well. Another attacking goal threat, and we don't have enough of them. I mean, on his day, James Forrest is arguably certainly has been at different points in the last few seasons, going back probably three seasons, was Celtic's best attacking player. He's not managed to get a run of games for a very long time. So if they can get him back fit and they are able to incorporate him back into what's looking like a fairly ominous attacking line, sort the defence out, either with a signing or two in January or Julian coming back in and shoring things up a little bit, then they've got the makings of a very, very decent side. No, I think it would be good if, from a Scotland perspective, obviously, if they can manage Forrest's return. He's I think I'm right in saying he's come on, he's got sort of 20 minutes here or there for the last handful of games. No, he got half an hour against Dundee before the international break, and he came on in the Ferencváros game and got a run out as well. So if they can kind of manage his return a little bit, so that if he can get the remainder of the season, because he has had this kind of stop start over the last, what seems like maybe the last 18 months or so, then a huge player for Celtic and for Scotland.
Special mention for that Craig Bryson block, but also Joe Hart. How has Joe Hart managed to get so many clean sheets this season when he seems to have like a brain fart a game?
I don't know. Celtic have four goalkeepers. I don't think any of them are good, and I don't think Joe Hart's the best of them.
But the defence has been, there's obviously been question marks about their defence as well, quite rightly, and some of it's down to just how the aggressive way that they play. How are they still getting as many clean sheets as they're getting?
I mean, the only explanation I can give it is that Joe Hart's brain farts, that says like a song by The Fall or something, they are so unpredictable and inexplicable, they don't always end up with a goal. Sometimes it's like he swings at it and it hits his wrong foot and it goes out for a throw-in or something. It's not like the predictable stuff where he comes and he punches and it goes into his own net. It's that like he clown cars it in a way that you cannot possibly expect. So it's, you know, there's the saying that like if a goalkeeper makes a mistake, it's much worse than if a striker makes a mistake, because it always ends up with a goal. Joe Hart's mistakes don't seem to. They seem to regularly end up with like it clips the outside of the post, or he slices it and it falls to the feet of Anthony Ralston, who just happened to be in the right place at the right time. He's had a couple, but I think the ones that he's the real howlers, he's got away with so far. But there'll be a couple before the end of the season, absolutely.
Let's hope so. I've just remembered that Darren McGregor pass back as well, but we're not talking about that game anymore. Okay, so next month Hibs will take on Celtic in the final of the Premier Sports Cup. We'll move on now to the league matches, which took place on Saturday. The first of those that we're going to cover was at Tannadice, where Dundee United beat Aberdeen by a goal to nil. I think we should start with the obvious, Tom. This is an ongoing police incident after a 35-year-old man was arrested and charged. But we can talk about the referee's response to it. I think that people are correct in saying that it was the letter of the law applied there, and he isn't wrong to give him a booking. But he also, well, in that sense, he's not wrong. But he also has the power to show discretion and not do it. But there has been, I don't know if you heard it, just before we came on air, on Sports Sound, and I don't know whether this completely changes things, but Daryl Broadfoot said that the linesman actually told Bobby Madden that he saw something, and it turns out he got it wrong. He thinks that Ojo had pushed the fan.
There's so much about this that's frustrating. Like, not just, and I could talk for 40 minutes about this as well on its own, because I'm a fan, and it would it have made a difference to the game? Who knows? Because Aberdeen were pretty rotten. We're not particularly creative, unless Ryan Hedges was running at Dundee United. There wasn't an awful lot that was going to come, but 50 minutes against 10 men, who knows? You've certainly got more of a chance. But any opposition team for this to happen to, it's incredibly frustrating. I don't buy that. I don't buy that it was something that came from the, Daryl will know more than me and be better connected than me, but if that's what he's been told, I'm sure that's what he's been told. But it just doesn't make sense to me, because if he's pushed the fan, then I don't think he would give him a second booking.
Exactly.
I think it would be a straight red card. I don't even think necessarily, like, if it's being booked for deliberately leaving the pitch, players do that to get the ball back every single game. They jump the hoardings, they like that.
he was already off the pitch because of his momentum as well. So he was already over the hoardings because of that.
Exactly. His momentum had taken him over the hoardings. It's completely innocuous. Some dickhead pushes him. And rather than
allegedly
there being some dickhead pushes him,
we've got the Veritas defense.
Is he an alleged dickhead or is it an alleged push? I don't know. I'll take it up with my lawyers. But somebody, there's the incident, and rather than react to it, it takes like an awful lot of restraint not to do anything. And frustrated at the incident, frustrated as a supporter that you think, you know, Callum Butcher's gone and done something daft and got himself sent off. We've got a good chance of winning this now because but within 3 minutes, Bobby Madden decides to level it up. If Bobby Madden didn't see it, and the big question mark for me remains, why was Stephen Glass sent off at halftime? Because presumably he said something or something, words were said to that effect. We kind of need to know what was said there, because that would give an awful lot of context to the event, to events as well.
Stephen Glass said after the game that he said he was saying something to his assistant who was in the ear of Madden at the time. He said he went over to, because you see him push his coach away from the referees. Mm. And Stephen Glass said after the match that he said something to his coach which was interpreted by Madden as questioning his integrity, and that's why he was sent off. Because I was actually surprised when Glass appeared in the stand for the second half, because it looked like Glass was going about at halftime being peacemaker. He was going over at his own players and saying, right, get in. And then he was going over at his coach and saying, get away from the referee. So it looked like he was being peacemaker. So I was surprised when he was got sent off. But that was what Glass said after the game, that something he has said has been interpreted.
And his comments after the game, I mean, they've disappointed me as well. That he was like, Ojo knows that he shouldn't have reacted, and he feels like he's let his teammates down, or words to that effect, which don't sit with the idea that he was angry enough to say something to someone to get sent off, and absolutely were not the case. Like, that, you need to defend your player in that instance. There's no way that they can rescind the booking, apparently. Mm-hmm. So he is going to sit that out. So and I've tried to sort of leave this aside as a supporter and in the cold light of day. It's incredibly disappointing that losing the game, and losing the game to the only bit of real quality in the match, should come to that. Like, Hearts' goal was great. It was a lovely bit of improvisation.
Great season he's having.
He's having a fantastic season. There was a sense that that would happen, because that's just the way that Aberdeen seasons has been going. But daft stuff like this just keeps happening. This is definitely the daftest. And I don't know what you do. I don't know what happens from it. There's no consequences, really. We've got to kind of go. And Ojo's actually been one of the better players this season. That's not saying much. But he has been one of the better performers. He's been a versatile. Whenever he's been asked to fill in different roles, he's done it well. He's been... disappointed in the incident. Disappointed in Dundee United, to be honest, in not saying something in their statement apologising to the player, because I think that, you know, Tam Courts came out of the alleged racism incident at Ross County very well. Very different things altogether, but I think there is a duty of care to the players that come to you. And I don't mean in the sense like there's assaults and assaults. You know, he wasn't smashed in the face with something, but it's still just stupid and shouldn't happen.
It was quite a violent push, though. Yeah, it was quite a violent push. And then, I don't know, you don't want to get into like hypotheticals with these things, but it wasn't, yeah, I know what you're saying, there's assaults, but it was a push to the point where it was an assault rather than just a kind of get away or a, yeah, exactly, yeah, rather than a brush off.
It wasn't lighthearted, it wasn't, mm-hmm. And it's just, it's frustrating that there will be, I've always liked the idea that referees could at least come forward and say why, what they saw, and give some shine a light on why decisions were made. I think it would be great for trust. I think it would be great for, you know, it'd be great entertainment if nothing else. But also, it would humanize them a little bit, and especially when there's incidents like this where you just kind of want to know what he saw or who he heard from, or if it was just, you know, I would be more inclined to say, okay, fine, it was an honest mistake. He thought he saw something, or he thought, than what it seems like, which I'm fighting every urge to just feel like he thought he saw something and fudged it.
But to talk about the game for a little bit, it just seemed another game where Aberdeen had a lot of the ball and they couldn't do much with it. It's just been the same old story for quite a lot of matches this season for Aberdeen, and it was another game. I suppose it was quite the contrast to their previous match, but in general their defence has held quite firm this season, Dundee United, and they brought on Apery and changed their shape a little bit in the second half, and that gave them real impetus. It was certainly him that ran through and won the corner, but I can't remember if it was him that had robbed Longstaff of the ball.
Mm-hmm. I think it was. No, they were resolute. Their defence was good. They had a lot of threat coming from from McMahon. I thought he had a very good game on the left hand side. There was a sense when they went down to 10 that there was a brief minute of panic, as there might have been, but then from the second half they were very settled, and they knew their roles better. I mean, there are some mitigating circumstances for why Aberdeen have been so bad defensively. They finished the game with Scott Brown, Dean Campbell, and I think it was just Scott Brown and Dean Campbell, actually, the centre back pairing. There's been such bad defensive problems. But Dundee United knew that the players looked like they knew what they were doing. They looked like they played together. They looked like they had some form of chemistry, and they were compact when they needed to, and they had an out ball. They kind of gave up possession a little cheaply in the first half, I think, but were a little bit more direct in the second and were able to break, which made them dangerous. There was the feeling, I think, there was almost a feeling when they scored that was coming.
Okay, I think we should move on from there, and let's go to Fir Park, where Motherwell beat Hearts 2-0. Hearts, after starting the season away from home fairly well, have gone right back into the form that they've had for about a decade now. Goals from Connor Shields and from Ricky Lamy were enough to take the points for Motherwell, who are only 3 points behind Hearts now. It's been a weird old season for Motherwell, where they've kind of just gone between the two extremes.
Yeah, I can't make my mind up about them at all. I mean, I started the season and I thought they would be fighting for a playoff place. I didn't think there was an awful lot of creativity in that team. They'd lost proven goal scorer. There was the transfers that had come in didn't necessarily look like they were going to do much. And even sort of 4 or 5 weeks ago, I thought that, you know, right now they've had a bad run. Now they're, you know, they'll get sucked back into things, but they're not. They've been resolute, look defensively solid. I still don't think there's a huge amount of creativity in that team, but they're very hard to break down. Their midfield works really, really hard. They work hard right the way throughout, and from back to front. And there's players who have adapted to there's almost like players that have adapted to new positions. I mean, like Beavis McGavy must have played 6 different roles for Motherwell in the last 18 months and is now a roving right back, keeping Scotland international Stephen O'Donnell at the team.
I just thought Connor Shields is one person that needs to be singled out for this performance as well. I mean, in fact, to pick up on something you said first, when it doesn't work, it feels like their attack can just be a bit cut off from the rest of the team. I think that has been the one area where he's struggled the most, I think, and that's the centre of his midfield. They still kind of need a number 10 in there. I think they've got one lined up, haven't they? I can't remember, is it another Scandinavian or something they've got lined up to come in. But it does seem to be what they're kind of missing for. I know he doesn't like to set up with a number 10, but to give them that kind of option, or to, he just doesn't seem to have a creative midfield. He doesn't have that kind of David Turnbull type guy that can play either as a 10 or can play as one of the three. But what he gets out of Goss, Maguire and Slattery, as you said, is they fight hard, and Goss gives them set pieces. He gives them that set piece delivery, which he's just worth having in the team for that alone, it seems. But Connor Shields, I think we should talk about, he was like, his pace and movement, as well as his Harry, and that was a big part of their game plan, was to Harry Hearts, and he caused Hearts issues all afternoon. He scored one, he pulled out an absolutely amazing save from Craig Gordon at point blank. What made it even more amazing, it was the second of a double save. And then you've already mentioned Bagabi. I was going to single him out. I thought Woodlery was very good as well, and Ricky Lamy also had a great game, who's a player who, I mean, sometimes he's just absolutely fantastic, and there's other times he just looks like a complete huddy. But yeah, their pressing was relentless. They created so many chances. I mean, it's probably the best performance of the season from them, and I'm not going to pretend that I've watched every Motherwell game this season, but I'm struggling to think of one where they've created that much and they've dominated that much.
And seemed that comfortable as well, I think. They've been kind of hot and cold, more hot than they have cold, and they've managed to put runs together. But I think you might be right. I can't necessarily think of another game where they were both efficient and managed to keep Hearts at arm's length. And there wasn't, I don't think there was any particular point when you thought they'd lost control of this game, which is maybe something, that they haven't had even in the games that they've won. They've nicked wins here and there, and they've won matches by working harder than the opposition. I don't think, and I don't mean that as any kind of insult. I think there is not a huge amount of natural width in the team. There's not a huge amount of natural flair in the team, but there's, like you said, there's great deliveries from set pieces. There's a lot of teamwork. There's a lot of off the ball that goes on. But yeah, this was as complete a performance as they've had this season.
And Hearts were just completely outfought and outplayed on the day. I know that there's some people that want to play up the physical and the gamesmanship elements, no less than Robbie Nielsen has been sounding a wee bit like he's got sour grapes after the game, but that's not the right expression, is it? Just, he sounds like a bit of a bad loser. He's denouncing the horrible tactics from Motherwell, from time wasting and all that kind of stuff. But for me, Motherwell were better at that stuff, yes, and the physical side of the game, but they just played a lot better as well. And that was the main thing. That was the main reason that they won the game, is because they played better, not because they time wasted better. Final match. St Mirren 1, Livingston 1. Now, we were supposed to have a third person on today. They were at this game, and that was kind of going to take care of quite a lot of the detail of this match. So apologies to fans of those supporters. We just had a wee couple of issues. I'm sure we'll make it up to you in the future. I think I was maybe going to say we'll make up to you in the past there. That's where my head is at the moment. That's how feverish I've been over the last few days. But this match, I had this one on in the background while I was watching the Dundee United Aberdeen game, and from what I could tell, not much at all happened in the first half. Not much happened across the course of the game, but it had two of the best goals you'll see all season.
Two exceptional. I mean, Jamie McGrath's goal is one of the best goals I've seen in years. Like the technique for it, the vision for it, and it's not like it's not smashing it. It's not like even you know, spying the goalie off his line or anything like that. It's unbelievably good. And it's a bit of a cliche to be like, oh, you know, wrap up goal of the season already. But I can't. There was like physics involved in that that I don't quite understand.
Your instincts to think that the goalkeeper's too far off his line, but when you look at it, no, like McGrath's got a really small portion of the goal to get that in, and he just fires it in brilliantly.
I mean, I've got thoroughly enjoying watching him. You'd assume he's not going to be, in 2 months' time, he will probably not be, certainly not at St Mirren, so enjoy him while he's here. But like the vision of that and the kind of ability to spot that's even on or to try it. Brilliant.
I'm surprised to hear it was just his second goal of the season, but he has still been putting in performances for St Mirren this season. It's a really weird season for St Mirren as well. There wasn't so long ago that they hadn't had won a game in a while, and then during the run where they've beat Aberdeen, I think they went 5 games without losing, and now they're on a run 5 games without a win or something like that. It's another team that's having quite a strange season.
Yeah, I mean they're sixth in the league. They've got, I think I'm right in saying, the second worst goal difference in the league. Haven't won in 5, but they're sixth in the league. They're above Hibs, they're above Aberdeen, above St Johnstone, and they'd happily call it now. But it is an odd season for them. They don't seem to be they seem easier to break down and a little bit more fragile than they were last season, when you knew that they were always in games last season, and they didn't score enough to make the top six. That was their big problem. This season they seem to be a little bit more free flowing, a little bit more creative. They've got a few more players that are weighing in with goals, and have got a few more options up front that don't seem to quite have the same defensive solidity that they did last year. This is the kind of game that I think they would probably have won last season. They would not have conceded as good a goal as Devon's equaliser was. I think they would have probably cleared their lines a little bit quicker than they did.
Yeah, you say that they're above Hibs, but Hibs, of course, have about a month in hand, don't they? So I think Hibs will be above them before too long.
Well, Hibs have got to play, I think, a game every 20 minutes in December, so you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like Rangers in that UEFA Cup run at the end of that season all over again. It's like, that's what Hibs have got in December. You alluded to it there, but there was Nicky Devlin's goal as well. I mean, Jamie McGrath scores that goal and we're like, okay, that's the kind of thing that he can do, but Nicky Devlin scores that kind of goal, and it's not his forte, obviously, taking shots at the goal, but it was one of those. I described it in the group chat when I first saw it as the SPFL version of that Pavard goal that he scored for France in Russia. I can't exactly remember who it was against, but he obviously doesn't get he doesn't get his leg up and volley it like Pavard does there, but the way he catches it, I mean, for it coming out the air like that, the connection he gets on that with the outside of his boot, and for it to just arrow right into the bottom corner, like, it's just, it was straight as an arrow. It was unbelievable, the technique on that.
Yeah, and first time I saw it, I was like, that the technique on that's unbelievably good. But I thought maybe the goalkeeper could have done a bit better with it. And then you see just how the technique on it, the whip on it, the way it, like the bodies that it comes through, and all sorts. It's an unbelievably good goal. And to kind of keep your cool to be able to do that when everyone else is just trying to hack things clear. Not exactly known as a goal scorer. I think was one of his third goal in the last couple of seasons, but quite a way to get one. I think it's only his third goal for Livingston, full stop.
And what have you been thinking about Livingston this season? I did predict they would be bottom, I think, at the start of the season. I predicted them for bottom, or maybe I definitely had them in Ross County in the bottom two. But they've made me change my mind. I feel like it looks like he's finally got the workings of a squad, and that kind of hubris that he displayed about we will not get relegated it seems like there was something in it when he said it there, because it was a bit of a sort of ragtag bunch he had at the start of the season. They did some of their business late. He only had the same four defenders to choose from for the first 5 weeks of the season or something along those lines. They weren't filling their bench quite a bit. So it looks like he's right, and he's kind of, there's a long way to go, but it looks like he's starting to kind of throw that back in quite a lot of people's faces, and that there were legitimate reasons why they hadn't started the season very well.
Yeah, I mean, unbeaten in what, five or six games now in the league, and looking a little more threatening. I think even when Livy were right at the bottom of the league, if you looked at the differences between them, Dundee and Ross County, Ross County were getting a lot of credit, but weren't necessarily, but were like hemorrhaging goals. Dundee were kind of getting a little bit of credit and were hemorrhaging goals. Livingston weren't getting an awful lot of credit, were losing an awful lot of games, but they were only losing them by the odd goal here or there. They've got a bit more of a, they've got a more experienced squad. They've got a bit more quality in their squad than certainly Dundee and Ross County. I thought, like you, they would be down at the bottom of the league at the end of the season. I don't think they'll have quite the renaissance that they've had in the last two, where they've made like a real push towards Europe. But I think there's more than enough about them that they seem to have sorted some of the issues with the system. They seem to have, they seem to be getting a bit more out of like Andrew Shinney and Bruce Anderson, who not just in scoring goals, but just their kind of general all round play. And I think that they lost a lot of games at the start of the season because of individual mistakes, and those seem to be being kind of, they seem to have knocked that out of their game. And Strachek made a couple of high profile mistakes earlier in the season, and I think that's, they've kind of kept faith with him, and he's had a good run of games. I would be surprised if they were relegated.
Yeah, and they have to add to what you said about you picking out a few players there, it seems like they've got a resilient manager. That's two real tests he's come through. A real poor run of form, and then starting the season like he has this season, and he's come through both of them. Like I said, there's still a long way to go this season, obviously, but it's starting to look quite positive for them. I think that's us, Tom. That's gone a wee bit later than I'd intended, so apologies for keeping you from your bed. We will see everybody again on Thursday. There'll be people doing a main show. There's plenty of stuff going up on Patreon. There's also the review from the Terrace stuff to go that's going up. I was going to call it Review from the Terrace Network, but that's not right. You know what I'm talking about. Go check all that out and watch A View from the Terrace on Friday nights, or catch up with it on iPlayer. Have you got anything else to add, Tom? Have I missed anything there?
I think you've been thorough. It's a thorough and robust end to this podcast.
Thanks. I mean, the rest of it wasn't. So, I mean, at least we've ended well. Speak to you later, Tom.
Speak to you later. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.